The headlines this hour. Nearly 6 months into the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, the death toll among the Palestinians has surpassed 30,300. People have held a rally in the Malaysian capital Kuala Lumpur to protest against the Israeli genocide in Gaza. And Iran's president says that Palestinian resistance in Gaza has destroyed the pillars of the Israeli regime. This is News. Thanks for joining us. More Palestinians have lost their lives as Israel goes ahead with its genocidal campaign in the Gaza Strip, which is now at its 148th day. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, at least 92 Palestinians were killed and 156 others injured over the past 24 hours. At least 17 people were killed in the attacks in Deir al-Balah and the Jabalia refugee camp today. The ministry says many people are still trapped under the rubble, as rescuers are unable to reach them. Day ago, at least 10 children were reportedly killed or died from malnutrition and dehydration in the same city. The death toll from Israel's relentless onslaught on Gaza since early October has surpassed 30,300, most of them women and children. More than 71,500 Palestinians have also been injured, while thousands more remain unaccounted for. As the humanitarian situation in Gaza worsens, calls for boosting aid to the war-torn territory are mounting. Let's listen to Khulod Jawefel, Oxfam's Economic Justice Program Support Officer, urging action.
Everyone has heard about the massacre like 3 days ago when people were trying to collect food. They were waiting for aid to enter Gaza, North Gaza, and they were killed and they were shot. So we need to think about it. I cannot imagine that there is a plane that will dropping aid into Gaza, and in the same time, there is another plane near to this plane dropping shots and dropping bombs on those people who are trying to collect food. This is unbelievable, actually. We have almost more than 10 children who were died because of starvation and because of lack of food. We welcome the efforts internationally, efforts globally, efforts and everything, but also we need to think if it's really the real time in order to think about the process and about the procedures. And about the US, actually, we need also to understand whether there is a real intention to get aid for people in Gaza in order to avoid risk of famine and starvation. Generally, we welcome any efforts to enter aid into Gaza. But let's think about aid dropping. Why should we aid into Gaza? Instead of this, we should work more in order to facilitate the process of entering aid to Gaza. Because I believe that aid dropping aid into Gaza will not be a safe process to reach aid for all people. People in Gaza should have aid with more way of dignity, and aid should reach to everyone. I cannot believe that aid dropping can be a really safe way and a way with dignity for those people in Gaza who are starving and who cannot even find food.
Rights groups have warned that the Israeli regime is using starvation as a weapon against Palestinians in its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. A pediatrician at Kamal Adwan Hospital in the northern Gaza says malnourished children are at risk of death. Let's take a listen.
Malnutrition plays a major role in the number of children that come to us and thus in the number of deaths there are. When a child is supposed to eat 3 meals a day and ends up eating 1 meal, that's not enough for him. Your body becomes deficient in carbohydrates, vitamins, proteins, and deficient in fats that are necessary for the body. Then the body goes into a severe dehydration state. I can honestly say that we can't even deal properly with 50-60% of the cases we receive because we have nothing to give them. The most we can do for them is either give them saline solution or sugar solution. And of course, all of this is happening due to the lack of food. When a child is supposed to eat 3 meals a day and he only eats one, he obviously suffers from malnutrition and all the diseases that come because of it. And if the rate of infection goes up, he might get a lung infection or a blood infection. Let's also talk about hepatitis disease that's spreading widely in the country now, and that's also due to the lack of food. My message is an appeal to the entire world to intervene and save all the children, to bring medical aid and fuel to the hospitals, and to help bring back all the medical staff that had to leave the hospital to the south. The war must stop immediately.
Palestinian resistance groups under the Israeli regime have reportedly agreed on two major issues in their talks in Cairo. Egyptian security sources say that the two sides have reached a deal on the duration of the Gaza's truce, as well as the release of Israeli captives and Palestinian prisoners. They say the completion of the accord still requires an agreement on the withdrawal of Israeli forces from northern Gaza and a return of its residents. Gaza ceasefire negotiations are due to resume in the Egyptian capital on Sunday. Calls for ceasefire are increasing after the Israeli regime viciously opened fire on 8 seekers in Gaza on Thursday. The attack left 115 civilians dead. People in Lebanon and Malaysia have taken to the streets to voice support for Palestinians amid intensified Israeli crimes in Gaza. In the Lebanese capital of Beirut, people carried flags of Palestine and denounced Israeli plans for launching a ground invasion on the city of Rafah. They demanded an immediate end to the killing of Palestinian people in Gaza. In the Malaysian capital of Kuala Lumpur, the protesters called for a ceasefire. They also condemned the latest attack by the Israeli forces that took lives of scores of Palestinians who were seeking aid. Protesters called the attack senseless and without mercy. Among the protesters was the daughter of the Malaysian Prime Minister, who called for unity against Israeli crimes.
Most of us are here as Malaysians to showcase support against the genocide. And I think with 30,000 death tolls and countless of others who are still trapped under the rubble, in a clear-cut case of genocide, with the International Court of Justice also weighing in against Israel, the occupying force, I think it just, you know, requires any, you know, small semblance of humanity to come together. So it's not just restricted to Malaysia, and I do hope that many more people come together.
International concerns has in recent weeks centered on the southern city of Rafah, where ground invasion could displace hundreds of thousands of Palestinians across the frontier with Egypt. The last city untouched by Israeli ground troops, Rafah also serves as the main entry point of humanitarian aid. We're going to cross on over to Rome and talk to Max Jabili, who rejoins us now after speaking to us last hour. Well, I can see there are more people out there, Max. What's going on?
Absolutely. Thousands of people have poured into the streets of central Rome to stage the anti-protest, the anti-demonstration in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians. Other rallies have been organized this weekend, one in Florence, one in Pisa, one in Grosseto, another one in the Sicily southern island in Syracuse. Italians have been very active over the past months, organizing hundreds, I'd say even thousands of initiatives, including conferences, demonstrations, rallies across the whole of the Italian peninsula. Today, people here are calling on the Italian government to stop unconditionally supporting Israel, and they are calling on the international opinion to end complicity with Israel. I met a group of students a few minutes ago. They say they had enough of the police crackdown on their Palestine solidarity rallies. They want their voice to be heard, and they want to be free to say enough with the genocide in Palestine.
Taking a look at the crowd that's gathered now, I'm wondering how the security is being held there and how the police are actually behaving when it comes to the protesters.
Okay, let me tell you that there have been, as I said before, hundreds of protests across Italy, and there hasn't been any problems so far. The only time there were problems recorded is when the police attacked some young students in Pisa, in the city of Pisa. But so far, all protests have been very orderly, and the people have been very, very quiet. Still angry, still manifesting the discontent for the government's stand against the Palestinian and in support of Israel, but they've been really, really orderly so far.
Thank you so much for that. On the streets of Rome, Max Civili there, we do appreciate it. Moving on, the Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, says the pillars of the Israeli regime have been destroyed due to the Palestinian resistance nearly 5 months into the Gaza genocide.
Due to the resistance of the Palestinian nation, the pillars of this glass base has been destroyed, and irreparable losses have been inflicted on it.
Raisi said the formation of the Zionist regime was a colonialist project by the West, adding that the Palestinian people are still shouldering the burden of the formation of the Zionist entity. The Iranian president noted that the formation of the Israeli regime was aimed at Western dominance of the entire West Asia region. He made the remarks in an address to the 7th Summit of the Gas Exporting Countries Forum, or GECF, which is held in the Algerian capital, Algiers. The president reiterated the need for convergence of societies and governments to overcome challenges facing the world.
The world is facing several challenges, including energy security and climate change and tensions. More than ever before, there's the need for further convergence among societies and also governments seeking solutions in order to overcome these challenges and take steps in the path of development and help protect the environment and nature, and in this way create a brighter future.
Raisi said the appropriate use of natural resources, such as gas, as a clean source of energy, can play a crucial role in overcoming the challenges that the world is facing. The president said that there should be new paths for the transfer of natural gas, adding that this requires new policies and approaches. He called for joint ventures among gas exporting countries, so that all nations around the world will benefit from it. Raisi further added that the Islamic Republic is seeking bilateral and multilateral relations with all world countries, given its vast gas resources and transit situation in the region. Vote counting is underway in Iran for Friday's elections that will determine the fate of the next parliament and the assembly of experts. The process of vote tallying kicked off soon after polls closed following the extension of voting hours three times. Iran's Election Commission has announced the winners in some of the constituencies. The voter turnout in the elections is set to be over 41%, which means 25 million people out of more than 61 million eligible voters took part in the balloting. Over 15,000 candidates are vying for 290-seat parliament. Hundreds of candidates are also in the race for 88-seat Assembly of Experts, which is a deliberative body elected for 8 years.
The Iranian nation headed to the polls to cast ballots in two key elections of parliament and assembly of experts on Friday. The polls opened at 8 a.m. local time across the country in one of the most competitive elections of the Islamic Republic's history. Over 15,000 candidates for the 290-seat parliament and 144 candidates for the 88-seat assembly of experts were vying for seats in the major elections. Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei cast his ballot in the Tehran constituency in the first minutes of voting. Addressing the Iranian nation, he underlined the importance of Iran's elections. According to the Iranian constitution, the administration of affairs of the Islamic Republic should be based on the public opinion expressed by the means of elections.
Candidates are chosen by public vote. This means every Iranian that is eligible to vote has a say in the country's future. Therefore, many Iranians feel duty-bound to take part in the elections.
Each and every one of us has a role in the destiny of our country. In order to show our support for our country, we must come to the polling centers and vote.
The least I could do for the honor and security of my country is to vote. Some had sacrificed their lives for Iran's glory. Voting is the least I can do to show my love and support for my country.
Based on official records, the voter turnout in the elections has been at over 41%, which means 25 million people out of more than 61 million eligible voters took part in the balloting. The process of vote tallying kicked off soon after polls closed at midnight, following the extension of voting hours three times. While some constituencies have announced the winning candidates, the vote tallying process continues. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
The correspondent in Tehran, Gisumi Shahmedi, talked to us earlier about the vote count process. Let's take a listen.
Vote counting is still underway, and considering the large number of ballot boxes in the constituencies across the country, and also the fact that two different elections were held simultaneously, one for the Assembly of Experts and one for the Iranian Parliament, it is quite likely that this vote counting is going to take at least another 24 hours. We don't know exactly, but we do know that the Interior Ministry is doing its best to give us the final results as soon as possible. So far, in a number of provinces, the people that have been elected to go to the Assembly of Experts, since it was a smaller number, is now it has been confirmed. Of course, you do know, Kaveh, that all the statistics announced by the Interior Ministry needs the approval of the Constitutional Council or the Guardian Council in order to become official. However, by the numbers that we have, it's by now pretty much obvious which of those candidates will be going in.
Thousands of Yemenis have once again flooded the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities to reaffirm their full support for the Palestinians and their cause. Our correspondent Abdul Latif al-Washali has this report from Sana'a.
Thousands of Yemenis have taken to the streets across Yemen under the banner "You are not alone, we stand steadfast with Gaza" to express their unwavering support for the Palestinian people and their resistance. They also slammed the recent Israeli war crime against hundreds of civilians waiting for aid in Gaza.
We are free people, as are the Arab and Muslim people, but we hope that they have leadership like the Yemeni leadership and Mr. Abdul Malik al-Houthi. We condemn the massacre committed by the Zionist enemy against hundreds of civilians waiting for aid in Gaza. Israel will not achieve its goals and will not be able to erase Gaza, no matter how much it commits heinous crimes, and we will continue our stance in support of our brothers in Palestine.
The protesters expressed hope to see the Yemeni army using its surprise weapons against Western interests in the region. They emphasized that Yemen is not the instigator of a regional war, but rather it is those supporting a regime that commits war crimes against innocent civilians in Gaza.
We came today to express our position in support of Gaza and confirm our support for the operations of the Yemeni army, and the enemy must wait for the surprises announced by Mr. Abdul Malik al-Houthi.
We went out today to announce a general mobilization and confirm our support for our brothers in Gaza and the Palestinian cause. People of Gaza, God is with you, and we, after God, are with you. We will not abandon you no matter what, and we will continue our position until victory. We say to America and Israel that your ships will not pass through the Red Sea or the Gulf of Aden, no matter how many crimes you commit against the Yemeni people, and we are looking out for your interests.
Earlier, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, the Yemeni leader, stated that the country's armed forces will unveil military surprises in their Red Sea operations, which will persist as long as the Israeli genocidal war continues. He affirmed that maritime navigation remains secure for any country that does not participate in the aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip.
People here say the Yemeni army's naval operations in the Red Sea will end, provided that Israel stops its genocide in Gaza and lifts the siege of the Palestinian territory. They believe that military force is necessary to force the Israeli regime and its backers to hold the brutal war on Gaza. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Whoa. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. UNRWA says February registered a 50% reduction of humanitarian aid entering the besieged Gaza Strip compared to January. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, UNRWA says February registered a 50% reduction of humanitarian aid entering the besieged Gaza Strip compared to January. Humanitarian aid entering the Gaza Strip dropped by half this month. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, has said. UNRWA's Commissioner General Philippe Lazzarini said on X recently, February registered a 50% reduction of humanitarian aid entering Gaza compared to January. He added, aid was supposed to increase, not decrease, to address the huge needs of 2 million Palestinians in desperate living conditions. Lazzarini blamed the lack of political will, regular closing of the crossing points, insecurity due to Israeli regime military operations, and the collapse of civil order for the aid reduction. On average, nearly 98 aid trucks entered Gaza this month, UNRWA said in its latest situation report issued recently. The agency noted significant difficulties in bringing supplies through the Kerem Shalom and Rafah crossings due to security constraints and temporary closures. It said UNRWA has at times had to temporarily stop discharging supplies due to security concerns. Security to manage the crossing has been severely impacted due to the killing of several Palestinian policemen in Israeli airstrikes near the crossings recently. Also, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned that an all-out Israeli regime offensive in Rafah in the southern Gaza Strip would not only be terrifying for more than 1 million Palestinian civilians sheltering there, it would put the final nail in the coffin of our aid programs. Rafah is the core of the humanitarian aid operation and UNRWA is the backbone of that effort, Guterres told the Human Rights Council in Geneva. He said international law remains under attack and repeated his call for a humanitarian ceasefire. Guterres stressed, I invoked Article 99 for the first time in my mandate to put the greatest possible pressure on the Council to do everything in its power to end the bloodshed in Gaza and prevent escalation, but it was not enough. The Zionist regime plans to carry out a ground invasion in Rafah, where 1.4 million people have taken refuge despite international warnings and calls to avoid such an attack. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, at least 29,878 Palestinians have been killed and 70,250 15 wounded in the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza starting on October 7th. Moreover, at least 7,000 people are unaccounted for, presumed dead under the rubble of their homes throughout the Gaza Strip. Palestinian and international organizations say that the majority of those killed and wounded are women and children. The Zionist regime's aggression has also resulted in the forceful displacement of nearly 2 million people from all over the Gaza Strip, with the vast majority of the displaced forced into the densely crowded southern city of Rafah near the border with Egypt in what has become Palestine's largest mass exodus since the 1948 Nakba. The Tel Aviv regime says that 1,200 troops and civilians were killed during the Al-Aqsa flood operation on October 7th. The child killer regime of Israel is currently on trial before the International Court of Justice for genocide against Palestinians. The website of the New Arab also wrote, Israeli regime forces are systematically blocking access to people in Gaza, complicating the task of delivering aid in what has become a lawless war zone. The United Nations has said recently it has become nearly impossible to evacuate the sick or wounded and deliver aid in northern Gaza, and increasingly difficult in the south, said Jens Lark, spokesperson for the UN humanitarian agency OCHA. All planned aid convoys into the north have been denied by Israeli regime authorities in recent weeks. The last allowed was on January 23rd, according to the World Health Organization. Even convoys cleared in advance with Israeli regime authorities have been blocked or come under fire. Lark pointed to an incident when a convoy to evacuate 24 patients from the besieged Al Amal Hospital in the southern city of Khan Yunis, jointly organized by the WHO and Palestinian Red Crescent, was blocked for 7 hours and paramedics were abducted. Lark told journalists in Geneva, despite prior coordination for all staff members and vehicles with the Israeli side, the Israeli forces blocked the WHO-led convoy for many hours the moment it left the hospital. He said, the Israeli military forced patients and staff out of ambulances and stripped all paramedics of their clothes. The convoy had to leave another 31 patients behind at Al Amal, which is no longer functioning after suffering 40 attacks in the past month alone that have killed at least 25 people. 3 PRCS paramedics were subsequently detained, although their personal details had been shared with Israeli forces in advance. Lark said just one has been released. He stressed, this is not an isolated incident. 8 convoys have come under fire and are systematically denied access to people in need, meaning humanitarian workers are subject to unacceptable and preventable risk. The PRCS said it was suspending operations in Gaza for 48 hours because the Zionist regime has failed to ensure the safety of its emergency and medical terms. Lark said the UN would continue to remind Israeli regime forces they had an obligation at a minimum to facilitate safe, smooth and rapid passage when altered to aid missions. 2 human rights groups recently also accused the Zionist regime of further limiting humanitarian aid into Gaza, despite an order from the UN's top court.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
So dear brothers and sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Taqwa is not Quranic taqwa. Me abandoning my social and political responsibilities in the name of purity and holiness and staying away from sin. It's not the case that the believer who has taqwa, this is just a relationship between me and God, and I'm allowed to abandon my social and political responsibilities because of fear of, if I get involved in the dunya, I might commit sins, I might make mistakes. The dunya is najis, let me just stay away from it, let me run off. Right? Actually, this kind of taqwa, and I want to share the verse of this, is going to be one where you get your hands dirty. You get involved. You stop what's going on. You save those who are drowning in sin. Right? But first, the Quranic principle. Surah 57 and verse number 27. All right. So now, again, let's remember the concept. The idea that were there a group of people who believed in this way, that in order for me to get taqwa, Quranic taqwa, be close to God, what I need to do is stay away from the dunya. I don't do amr bil ma'ruf and nahy anil munkar. I don't do my social and political responsibilities. I withdraw, and this way I save myself. Yes, there were. What does the Quran say about those monks? Those people would run off in the hills. This now, let's see if you can find it. So it's part of the verse, part of the verse. Warahbaniya. Right? So Manassas, being a monk, being a monk, right? What does God say about this withdrawing, running away? I don't do my social and political responsibilities. I save myself. What does God say about it? Let's look at the verse. Ibtada'uha. How many of us have heard of the word bid'at? Bid'ah. Innovation. Right? Bid'ah is something you invent. Something that wasn't part of the deen. Right? It's not part of Allah's religion. I make a bid'ah and I put it in the deen. So what does God say about being a monk, running away, escaping? He says, وَرَحْبَانِيَا إِبْتَدَعُوهَا. They made, that was a bid'ah that they placed there. They invented it. مَا كَتَبْنَاهَا عَلَيْهِمْ. We did not write that for them. We didn't ordain that. That wasn't part of Islam, right? In Islam, no. You have to do your social and political responsibilities. Being a Muslim, being a mu'min, means I'm committed. I've got to go and I've got to rescue others. I can't say, well, it's dangerous. No, no. Taqwa is body armor. Okay? So example. I want to give two examples. One time, there's an active shooter situation. Right? An active shooter situation. If there's an active shooter situation, most people would run for their lives. Right? I don't want to get hurt. Right? This is now for us to understand the taqwa. What about the person who had military training, who donned the body armor, who goes in to rescue the kids to stop the oppressor? Right? Another situation. An area where there's a plague, there's this infectious disease, everybody's catching it, people are dropping like flies. So some people would, let's escape, let's run away, let's go live in the hills. There's another group of people who don the hazmat suit, who learn whatever protective measures they need to, and go in to rescue people. So the person who has taqwa, based on the ayat of the Quran, is the person who arms themselves with taqwa. We'll have to discuss what that is. And then with this armor of taqwa, goes into society, interacts, saves people, stops oppression, isn't abandoning the dunya, abandoning their social responsibilities. They don't think That this is just a personal relationship with me and God, and the dunya is not just any way. I want to give you one more story. This is from one of our shuhada, Shaheed Ibrahim Hadi. Ibrahim Hadi. May Allah raise him with Ahlul Bayt. So this story is about the beginning of the revolution. Beginning of the revolution. So Shaheed Ibrahim Hadi was working as part of internal affairs in the sports department. And a report came in. They're trying to change the society. A report comes in that one of the people who's in charge of these big gyms, right, former champion in his own sport, this man, unfortunately, he himself is not only corrupt, but corrupting. So his wife, not observing things, he himself, the jokes that he's making with women, the foul language that he's using, and the report came in, they said, you know, we've got to change this guy. This guy can't be the head of the gym. The guy who's telling the story says that I was writing a report to have this man removed. And Ibrahim came in. When Ibrahim came in, he said, what's happening? He said, well, there's this such and such guy. He's over there at the gym. And he's not doing his responsibility. He's fasid. We have to remove him. Ibrahim said, have you spoken to the person? He said, no, I didn't. But his employees say, everybody knows. This is very clear. Everybody knows who he is. Ibrahim said, we got to talk to the guy. The taqwa, a person of taqwa doesn't just, I just distance myself, they're all najas, get rid of them. No, let me talk to the guy. He said, let's go and see him. He said, we ended up going on a motorcycle, we drive over to the guy's residence, so these two young Basijis, we're going to drive over to this guy's residence. We pull up at the guy's residence, and Ibrahim jumps off the motorcycle, knock on the door, they said the guy's wife walked in, and almost like no hijab, it's like, you know, these guys are gone. So, when Ibrahim comes, he introduces himself. Who are you, young man standing at the door? I'm Ibrahim Hadi. And the guy recognizes. He says, oh, you're from internal affairs? He said, yeah. He said, I'd like to talk to you for a minute, Ibrahim. I'd like to talk to you for a minute. The guy said, come inside. He said, no, look, it'll take a few minutes. I just want to talk to you about it. The other guy's listening, telling the story. So Ibrahim sat the guy down, spoke to the guy. What are we doing? Is it correct that we do this? What's the effect that's happening on the youth when your wife is walking like this? The jokes that you're making, that language, you're in charge. You're a champion in your own department. He interacted with him. He spoke with him. He changed this man. Then by the time he was finished, he said that this was the letter I was supposed to give for your dismissal. And Ibrahim tore it up. He said, I want you to think about these words that I shared. And he left. The guy says, a few months later, a report came back in. This guy is a changed man now. One conversation. One of the mu'min, instead of running away, they're all najis, they're bad. One of the situations where the mu'min goes over and talks and engages and shares and explains. And what happened? The report came in later, how the man had changed. So that was one part about this Quranic taqwa. Now, another Quranic story that I want to give you, brothers and sisters, is about those people who, because we have to define what taqwa is. And who is it who is not affected by Quran? Can't be guided by Quran. To again know what that Quranic taqwa is. So Quranic taqwa, first let's define it. Quranic taqwa, this is going to be the big difference between Quranic taqwa and that false taqwa. Quranic taqwa will be that I am a vigilant person. I'm aware of my surroundings. I'm aware of the dangers. I'm aware of the challenges. I'm laser focused. And now, with my Quranic taqwa, I proceed and I act and I do not that because I'm aware of the dangers, I stay in my house and I don't face challenges. So one person is doing haraka, is moving, is advancing, is changing. Another person says, there's danger out there, there's sins, there's ma'asi, there's ghiba. I'll stay in the house, not do anything, and inshallah, that's taqwa. Okay? Two examples. One person is walking in a desert. And in this desert, because I have moccasins on, leather shoes. Leather shoes. And I'm walking in this desert. And in this desert, there are areas where there are thorns. Right? They'll go right through my moccasins. So when I'm walking, the person who has taqwa, I'm laser focused, I'm aware that there's danger, and I'm walking and I'm going through the desert, but I'm a little bit careful. Right? I don't just kind of heedlessly close my eyes and no. I'm careful, but I'm moving. I'm doing. I'm changing. I'm fixing. And I'm just careful. I'm vigilant. I'm aware of my surroundings.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
According to the latest opinion poll for The Observer, more than twice as many voters believe a Labour government would be better for housing, immigration and rural communities than the Tories. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Independent has covered this story and tells us more. According to a shock new opinion poll, Labour Party will beat the Tories in the most 100 rural constituencies in England. The opinion poll found Conservative support had fallen by 25 percentage points since the 2019 election, with just 34% of voters in the 100 most rural constituencies in England saying they would vote for the Conservative Party. The Conservatives currently hold 96 of the 100 most rural seats, but now face losing more than half to Labour and the Liberal Democrats, including those of senior Tories Jacob Rees-Mogg, Jeremy Hunt, Therese Coffey, Andrea Leadsom, Mel Stride, Mark Harper and Liam Fox. Labour support has risen over the same period, going from 20% in 2019 to 37% at the start of this year, giving the party a narrow lead in what has traditionally been considered Conservative territory. But while the survey suggests Conservative support has collapsed in the party's heartlands, many rural voters are still politically homeless, with almost 35% of respondents still undecided about how they will vote. Victoria Vivian, president of the Country Land and Business Association, which represents 28,000 rural businesses and landowners, said the opinion poll makes it clear that rural voters up and down the country feel disconnected from central government. She added, "This poll makes it clear that rural voters up and down the country feel politically homeless, and disconnected from central government, but their votes are still up for grabs. Whichever party produces a robust and ambitious plan for growth in the rural economy will undoubtedly secure support. She added, "For the good of our rural communities and the nation as a whole, now is the time for the main parties to make it clear that they will back the countryside." Support for the Liberal Democrats has remained largely unchanged, with 14% saying they would back the party, down only 2 percentage points from 2019. But the opinion poll carried out by Servation on behalf of the Country Land and Business Association of more than 1,000 people also shows neither of the main political parties is seen as understanding or respecting rural communities. Only 28% said they thought Labour understood rural communities, while 25% said the same about the Conservatives. The Country Land and Business Association has put forward a series of missions for parties to show they understand rural voters, including investing in profitable and sustainable farming, providing affordable homes for rural communities, tackling rural crime, and improving connections for rural areas. Victoria Vivian told the Press Association news agency, "Our vote is there for the taking, and they need to show us that they understand and respect our community." She added, "We feel invisible. I spoke to a small farming group in West Cornwall, and the question that was asked as why are governments not interested in our community? Why are they interested in everyone else's community except ours?" She said, "We are politically homeless." Rural dissatisfaction has led to protests by farmers in other parts of Europe, such as in France and Spain, while Welsh farmers have warned of huge unrest over plans by Cardiff to reform agricultural subsidies to reward sustainable food production. But Victoria Vivian played down the possibility of similar unrest in England, claiming farmers were well set on the way to agricultural transition, adding that Farming Minister Mark Spencer and Environmental Secretary Steve Barclay had produced very good rates for payments. The current government is committed to spending an average of £2.4 billion a year on the farming budget in England across this parliament, and has spent less than that in each of the last 2 years. It needs to spend at least £2.7 billion this year to hit its own target. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to the latest opinion poll from The Observer, more than twice as many voters believe a Labour government would be better for housing than the Tories. The survey shows Labour is well ahead of the Conservatives on most issues, including the economy, healthcare, education and the environment, immigration and crime, and level pegging on ones it has traditionally lagged way behind on, including defence. But its lead on housing and house prices will be particularly encouraging to Labour strategists, who want it to be seen as the best party for housing provision and a healthy housing market. At his party's annual conference last October, Keir Starmer pledged to get Britain building again, starting with 1.5 million new homes across the country within 5 years of a Labour government. The Labour Party has promised to shake up the planning system to allow for more house building, including the creation of a new generation of new towns, if it wins the next general election, as well as more green investment in onshore wind farms. When Opinium asked voters which party they thought would be best for housing and house prices, 34% chose a Labour government under Keir Starmer, and only just 16% who chose the Conservatives under Rishi Sunak. On the economy overall, 32% chose Labour against 26% for the Tories. On the subject of immigration, 30% chose Labour and 22% chose the Conservatives. On the subject of defence, traditionally one of the Conservatives' strongest suits and Labour's weakest, the parties are on equal pegging on 26% each. On fighting terrorism, the Tories are just 1 percentage point ahead of Labour on 25%. Overall, Labour has increased its lead over the Tories by 2 percentage points over the past 2 weeks. Labour is on 42%, up 2 percentage points, with the Tories unchanged on 27%. Adam Drummond, head of political and social research at Opinium, said, "Worrying for the Conservatives is a lack of indication, as we enter an election year, that they can restore public confidence in their handling of issues." Labour continues to hold the lead on being best placed to handle all of the top five issues the public thinks the country is facing. According to new analysis by Labour, inequality in the jobs market is costing Britain's economy £34 billion a year. The Labour leader, Keir Starmer, has charged the Conservatives of dismal failure in tackling unfairness at work, arguing Britain is less productive and less equal after 14 years of Conservative government. The opposition is vowing to close the major employment gaps, which see women, disabled people and black people, Asians and ethnic minority Britons facing costly barriers. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
On the occasion of the 40th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, February 11th, 2019, supervising and governmental organizations must prevent corruption from being conceived and fight its spread with sincerity and sensitivity. This fight needs faithful men ready for jihad, who are dignified and have pure financial records and bright hearts. This fight is an effective part of an all-around effort that the Islamic Republic must put into established justice. Justice has been among the primary ideals pursued by all prophets, and in the Islamic Republic, it has equal status and value. This is a sacred word for all times and in all lands, and would not be completely established unless under the governance of Imam Mahdi. May our spirits be sacrificed for him. However, it is relatively always and everywhere possible, and it is a duty to be carried out by anyone, especially the rulers and the powerful. The Islamic Republic has taken major steps in this way, examples of which have been briefly mentioned above. Of course, more works need to be done to explain and describe the efforts made in this regard, and the conspiracy by the enemies of the revolution aimed at twisting the reality, or at least remaining silent and concealing the truth, must be nullified.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Regardless, I am clearly telling the beloved young people that the future of the country awaits. That what has been done until now stands at a huge distance from what must have been done. In the Islamic Republic, the officials' hearts must constantly beat for eliminating the deprivations, and they must be seriously fearful of deep class struggles. In the Islamic Republic, not only seeking wealth is not a crime, it is actually encouraged. However, discrimination in the distribution of public resources and granting special privileges and tolerating economic cheaters, all of which result in injustice, are strictly forbidden. Moreover, ignoring classes in need of support is never acceptable.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I wanna thank you for bringing me home.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.